Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Everyday Divinity. My name is Dr. Idari Bassi, and I invite you to take a deep breath and inhale peace and clarity and exhale the stresses and concerns of the day. Join us as we talk to people and practitioners from all walks of life and traditions to encourage and inspire you to find grace in the daily race. Welcome.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Everyday Divinity. I am Dr. Idari E. Bassi, your host. Our guest tonight is Dr. Carol Adrian, internationally known author, intuitive counselor, master numerologist, and life coach. And she is author of the runaway bestseller, The Purpose of Your Life, which was featured on Oprah. And she worked with James Redfield to co-author The Experiential Guide for the Celestine Prophecy. And she has helped and empowered thousands of people create the life that they desire, and we're just thrilled to have her on the program with us this evening. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, great, great. Well, I was wondering if you could share a little bit with our listening audience about your path to accumulating this expertise in intuitive life purpose counseling, and explain exactly what that entails.
Well, we're just going to start right off, aren't we?
We're just going to jump right in.
Well, let's just jump right in here. Well, gosh, you know, I always think I sort of backed into this whole field, and yet I feel like it's exactly what I was supposed to be doing in life. For many years, when I first started out and I was young, I was a painter, and I was totally dedicated to art, and I still love art. I think of myself as an artist, but, you know, this some years ago, this happened back in the 70s, I guess it was, the first thing that really happened to me, there was a lot of synchronicities, although at the time I really wasn't aware of them. I just thought, wow, you know, that was interesting, but I didn't have even a word for it. And I felt I was always drawn to do the things that interested me the most. So that's kind of the function that happened in my life to keep driving me forward into different areas where I didn't know what I was doing. But I think the kickoff time was really when I had divorced in 1969. I had two children, small, and I kept thinking I wanted to change my name. And at the same time, I was going through a really, chaotic time. It was the 60s, you know, and so I my job was really hard. I was a catering manager, and so I couldn't stand it anymore, and I took a vacation to Santa Fe with a girlfriend, and when I was there, I just fell in love with the place. It resonated with me in a way that boggled my mind. Even the scenery looked like what I had been painting on my painting, same colors.
Oh,
I was just amazed.
My goodness.
So I came home, and I said, you know what, I'm going to chuck everything and move there. And everybody thought I was crazy, but I did it anyway. I even took my kids out of school around, I think it was probably around March or April before the term ended, and put ourselves in the car and drove out there.
Mm.
And the minute I got to Santa Fe, a lot of synchronicities happened. I mean, unbelievable things. And I ran into people, the very first weekend, I ran into people that, you know, worked with my husband, my ex-husband, and knew me. And I didn't even know they were there. It was just one thing after another.
Wow.
So that kind of told me I was in the right place, although I had no idea what that meant anyway. I was just there because it was sort of a time to, you know, trying to get away from my job and everything. And in the course of that period, I was thinking about changing my name, but I didn't do anything about it until one day I met a woman at a party and mentioned it to her, Ruth Dreher, and she said, oh, well, if you're going to change your name, you need to do it using numerology.
Mm.
So I'd never heard of it before. Numerology is the study of numbers and letters, your birth name and your birthday. And so she did a chart for me. It's similar to astrology, but it uses numbers.
Sure.
And the minute I saw that chart, I just, something clicked in my head, literally, and I was just fascinated. And that was the turning point for me. I just was fascinated by it. Now, I didn't run out and become a practitioner or anything. I just started doing it on everybody I could get hold of, you know,
oh,
ask everybody like you. I would say, what's your birthday? You know,
guinea pigs.
So anyway, at that same time, I noticed that my energy for being in Santa Fe had dropped, and it was about a year that I'd been there. I knew that I had to do something. My intuition said, go to school, go to graduate school. So I listened to that, didn't know what in the world I would study. I wound up going back to California, of course. This is one of those times when you have to be willing to look like a fool when you make a big life change and
indeed,
it doesn't work out the way you thought it was going to. Okay, so I went back, and I thought, okay, now I have to go to school, but where would I go? What would I study? I didn't have a clue as to what I would study. So I started thinking I was always interested in psychology, but I visited a few schools, and gee whiz, it just didn't appeal to me. That it just was not it. And I was always searching for something a little bit, and I didn't even know what. I mean, I couldn't put a name to it in those days. But I synchronistically, again, I won't go into all the ins and outs of it. Actually, I talk about that in my book, The Purpose of Your Life. It's like the first chapter.
Sure.
And so I finally did. A girlfriend called me, and she said, oh, I found the great graduate program. We have to take it. It's called, it's on archetypal psychology, which is really the work of Carl Jung and James Hillman. And those are the two big figures in it. And it's all about symbols and what under, you know, what lies beneath the surface. And that's exactly what I wanted to study. Even had a bit of art in there with mandalas and the power of mandalas and so forth. And I knew that was it. And I took that course. I found some jobs, put myself through school. I was really cleaning houses at the time and cooking in people's kitchens to make a living and support the kids and myself. And then got out of there and still didn't know what I was going to do with myself. I mean, what, I had two useless degrees as far as I was concerned, art history from Berkeley and this archetypal psychology degree. So I went on, got some more day jobs for a long time, and it wasn't until I really had, I got breast cancer, and I had to stop working. It was just no way around it. I got, my husband left me, I got breast cancer, my finances were in ruins, everything came to a dead halt. And that was what really catalyzed me into thinking, well, what are you going to do with your life here? You know, what do you want to do next? Are you going to, if you're going to keep living here, what do you want to do? So it made me kind of take a firmer hand with myself, because I was kind of just like, you know, trying to do both things, trying to do a little bit of numerology on the side as a practitioner. I finally did start charging money for it, and but always working office jobs to keep the living, you know, to keep my living going. So finally, one of my girlfriends said, you know, you just have to admit that this is your path. And she was a big help. So it's really important on your path whenever things are happening. You've got to have supportive people around you because you can't really do it by yourself.
Sure.
So anyway, that's kind of how I got lurched into this whole thing. And after that, and I really made an internal decision that I was going to do this because this is who I am, and I could, I just had to stop trying to be normal, you know, you know, and do the normal thing, whatever that is. And I know, I just sort of brought myself up by my bootstraps and started in full time doing this work.
Wow.
So that's kind of the Reader's Digest version of how I got started.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So when so numerology is the primary tool that you use in your counseling work, or do you or well, the archetypal studies as well? Do they all kind
exactly.
of mesh together?
Yeah. You know, I think like I keep adding things on all the time. It is, numerology is the base that I start with, but it's, to me, it's a language and it's an intuitive tool to kind of look at people's charts, let's say, and see where are they in their timing, what's their destiny number say, and what's their heart's desire telling them what they want to do, et cetera. Once I've got that established, and then I like talking to the person and really listening to what are their hopes and dreams and their fears. Because I'm really interested in where our belief systems get in our way. And you can hear it. Sometimes you certainly hear it easier in other people than you can in your own life when you're,
sure.
you know, you're, you have your own stuff going on, you don't hear it. But in other
sure.
people, when you're talking with people, when I'm talking with my clients, you know, I try to listen very carefully for the kind of belief systems that are working for them or against them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've added that in as kind of the life coaching part of it. So when I do a consultation, I start with the numerology, but then I, you know, establish what they want to, you know, where are they going, what do they want to accomplish, and this is kind of what I see them doing right now. And then we go from there into more of like strategizing and doing a little bit of, you know, problem solving. And even sometimes, I love the system of emotional freedom technique, which is that tapping system. A lot of people know about it now. It's very simple to learn. They have it on online, emofree.com. You can learn it. I mean, it's the founder of it, Gary Craig's, you know, gives out the techniques quite easily. I think it's important to study with somebody for a little bit of time. But I find that's a very useful thing to do in sort of clearing away some blocks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very good spiritual tool for people. If you have any kind of physical, emotional problem, you can look at that and do the tapping and talk about it. There's a system, but you can download some of that information for free.
Sure.
The technique. So I really like it that he's so generous with his technique there.
Indeed. Well, I'm really struck by your statement about that your internal decision, or maybe you may not have articulated as such, but your decision not to be normal or do the normal thing. And I remember a quote from your book, The Purpose of Your Life, and you said that our purpose is found each moment as we make choices to be who we really are. And
right.
Just so it's like a bolt of lightning about how these ideas really get manifested, practically speaking.
I'm glad you honed in on that point, because one of the things I'd like to just say today, I know we're talking about spiritual tools for, you know, discovering our life purpose and so forth, and I think all too often, and I'm included in this too, but I've learned now to see it a little differently, is that we always think that we have some life purpose statement or like job title that's going to leap out in neon signs that says, you know, you were born to be a this or that. And I don't think that's how we should see life purpose anymore. It really is a moment-to-moment decision, because you're unfolding. And like I said, okay, I was an artist in the beginning. I did everything I could to photograph my pictures, take them around, send out my deals, you know, do whatever I had to do. But that led me somewhere else, and it wasn't my final purpose.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter that we have a name or a description for our final purpose. Maybe we'll know it when we, you know, pass over and reflect on it when we're in the spiritual world and we have a chance to review our life and those great ideas where you review your life after death. I'm really waiting. I can't wait for my life review. I really want to see, oh, God, what did I miss?
Oh,
you
know, my goodness.
I know I don't want to die, of course, right now, but
sure.
I think the life review is totally fascinating to me.
Well,
I hope I get one.
That's so funny, because I think about it like a performance review at work, and your boss
calls
you into his office and said,
Exactly. There's that great movie that, remember that movie with Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep?
What was it
like,
called?
I'm blanking right now.
Oh, no, but I think...
But they were on a bus, they went over, and they did their life review. Oh, if people could find that, it's such a great thing to watch.
Gotcha, really.
I can't quite bring it up in my mind, but anyways, that's one of the things.
Well,
so, I don't forget now, what were we talking about?
Yes, the idea about that your life purpose not just kind of dropping out of the sky in one fell swoop.
Yeah,
but
it really, it's an unfolding thing, and I think that's something that we should really keep in mind, that, you know, you have long-term goals and you have short-term goals, and they all mesh together. You know, when I was a single mother, I mean, I had to be a mother. I had to cook the food, come home, do the homework, talk to my kids, you know. And I also wanted to paint. I wanted to, like, get this over with so I could go paint now. Can I go please read my novel?
Oh.
This is 10 minutes I have before I fall asleep. You know, so, but now my kids are in their 40s and I have grandchildren.
Oh, my
goodness. You know, now I have other things. You know, you have to be present with whatever is going on in your life and not think, oh, my God, I'm not doing my life purpose. I know I should be doing more.
Oh, but that's
feeling
that's
of knowing
so
that
tough.
You should be doing
that's
more.
That's so tough.
You know, that keeps you going. That does keep you searching. I don't put it down, but I don't think we should live our lives with the fact that we're not doing enough right now. Because if you are, let's say, a mother or a father, when you have small children, that is your purpose right now. Do it. Do it well, and then you will eventually they will grow up, believe me, very quickly, and you will be in another place. know, you don't have to think you have to do it all. A lot of times I talk with a lot of younger women that have children, and, you know, I don't know if I'm doing enough, and, you know, I should be doing more. No, you're fine. Take it easy here.
Well,
you know?
I think you make a great point.
Soon enough.
Well, you know, I think it's just the reality of, you know, living in a material world and people having more of a, I guess, a linear perspective, and they just want to kind of pile it all in, and they want a title, a job description, and they just want to, you know, okay, lay it out, or some big
right.
booming voice from the sky just saying, you are meant to be X.
Right.
And so unfolding,
exactly.
it's a very subtle process, and there are not a lot of people that are chomping at the bit for subtlety.
That's right. I know. It's like we have to. It's all like we're engineering, and like we have to get our locomotive going and get all this accomplished, and then be someplace that we want to be. Well, not really. You know, you got to be someplace this afternoon or tonight.
Yes.
And just be present with yourself and enjoy and acknowledge and, you know, be grateful for what you have right now. It's fine what you have right now. It's exactly what you need right now.
Yeah.
You know,
but, you know, we get caught up in this understanding that it has to be more, it always has to be different, has to be bigger, the latest model. So we are just kind of galloping along before our consciousness, I mean, even ahead of what our consciousness could actually realistically handle.
It is a gallop. That's a good word to use. It is a galloping. I always like to remind people and myself that there's always a reason for why we are where we are right now. Wherever we are, wherever anybody is listening right now, and they think about where am I in life, what am I doing, who do I see every day, what kind of job do I have, there's a good reason for it. And I know this is hard sometimes when I work with people they come to me because they want to find another job or they want to, you know, change careers or whatever. And there is a reason that they are there right now. And once they solve it, unless solve it isn't the right word, because it isn't something you can figure out, but kind of once you get it or you understand that maybe you have a boss that's driving you crazy and maybe they're just like your father and you're always reacting to that voice in your head and you've got a real voice in front of you, and hey, maybe you can learn to let go of that. Sometimes our purpose really is to learn to let go of the past.
Oh,
you know?
Gotcha.
It's not
yes.
some job title. It's something like letting go of the past or learning to stand up for ourselves a little bit more.
Indeed.
You know,
indeed.
Not in a selfish way, just for what is our due? What do we want?
Sure.
You know, or
sure.
just saying, I'm not going to take this anymore.
Well,
that's your purpose.
Well, in the course of your practice, have you seen a growing interest in these type of questions or these type of topics? Or, cause, for example, right after September 11th, just as an intuitive, I saw a lot more interest in people learning how to meditate, how are people getting readings or things like that. So are you seeing any fluctuations in, in your client base?
I can't say that I am because I think this particular subject of what is my life purpose or something like that, you know, what am I supposed to be doing, is really innate in us, in all of us. And it will get catalyzed, I think, when we're under stress or we have, like, something that jolts us into thinking about what's a bigger picture here, like 9/11, you know, like, God, what is, you know, what's all worth it? This happens a lot when people get ill, when they have illnesses.
Yes.
Or they lose all their money or they lose a loved one. I mean, it really forces you into reviewing what's important.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a perennial issue. I really keep, and I think people keep asking this question no matter really what's going on, but maybe more so during times of crisis, you know. And then, and I don't know, I'm wondering right now, I'm wondering if, you know, when we have like more of a financial stress point like we have now, maybe people think their life purpose, finding something better than what they have, is irrelevant because they just want to keep their job or something, you know.
Mm.
So I don't know quite how these things impact us. I think it's hard to say. I know that when I went through my big kind of, I don't know, that the period of the 69 to, say, 79, in that period of the 60s and 70s, there was so much going on socially that it was a lot easier, I think, for me to change. And I was sort of a bohemian. Let's say. I won't say I was a hippie, but probably everybody thought I was a hippie. But I was a bohemian, okay? But, you know, my kids, my daughter is 42 and my son is 41, and they're not hippies. In this generation, they are the upright citizens. They are the perfect. They are very good parents. Very good parents.
Wow.
So I mean, like, okay, but they had their kids. My daughter had her kids 15 years after I had mine. I had my both of them like in my early 20s.
Mm.
She had her first child at I think 38.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
A big difference. She's a lot more mature than I was at the time.
Sure.
So I wasn't asking questions about my life purpose when I was in my 20s. I thought it was being an artist. I was happy with that. I just didn't want to be ordinary even then. I really thought to myself, I don't want to go out and live in the suburbs. I now actually live in the suburbs. I mean, you could say I live in El Cerrito, which is near Berkeley, and I live in a very nice little neighborhood. It's kind of very down to earth, and I just adore it. I adore it, you know?
Mm,
so
gotcha.
I don't know. I don't know what all that has to do with the spiritual tools.
Well, it might not be you experience that much as far as fluctuations in your own practice, but maybe a growing interest in the tools that you're leveraging. Would that be an accurate? Okay.
You mean of other people?
No, things like numerology, intuitive work, and things of that nature. There might be.
You think people are getting more interested in that?
Yeah. You think?
Yeah, I do think. I think it's become so much more, people are so much more aware of it now and less resistant or not knowing about it, you know, now. Yeah, numerology was very unknown when I first started practicing it. And now there's tons of sites on the Internet supposedly doing numerology. I don't know how far they get into it. But, I do think that all of these things, I think, you know, after the Celestine Prophecy was a big, big opener for a lot of people who might not have been interested in what we would call spiritual, you know,
topics, or the
spiritual way or spiritual topics. Yeah, and I think that book was so easy to read and so exciting for a lot of people that it really brought people into this field in a really nice way. And some of them will continue studying. Others will just, you know, think, well, that was that, and they go on.
Well, that was nice, and then we'll move on to something else.
Figure out their portfolios.
Sure, definitely. It's so funny when, because I remember when a Celestine Prophecy came out, and now I'm looking at the reaction that, like the Law, the Secret, has had. So it's almost as if it was like a really early precursor of just, mass introduction of some of these bigger ideas.
Yes, it was. But you know, we also had before that. We had, how to influence people, how to win friends and influence people. We had, the Napoleon Hill work, the Catherine Ponder work on prosperity.
Exactly.
Those were the early pioneers of all this work that, is being now resuscitated. And it gets resuscitated. I can see that now. Every, decade or so, there'll be a new spin on it, a new way of talking about it.
Sure.
One of my big teachers was Arnold Patton back in the 80s. Oh, my God. And that was just like the most synchronistic period of my life, how I got in touch with all of his work. He was a lawyer from New York, I think, and he's still practicing, I think. Not in law, but he became a teacher he called it the Law of Abundance.
Oh.
And, oh, my gosh, I just learned so much. And that came right at the period that I had decided to be full-time as a practitioner. Using his work, and he had he gave seminars, and then he showed us how to start support groups and gave us protocols for meeting once a week to talk with like-minded people, kind of talk, not give each other advice, just kind of talk and get it out there.
Sure.
And follow his principles that he put out there, and it was such a good model that I know intuitively, I unconsciously, I picked up a lot of what I know from that work.
Okay.
So that was a great spiritual experience for me, and it came exactly at the right time. Talk about the idea of what the teacher appears when the student is ready.
Exactly, exactly.
For me, that really was true.
Well,
I'm sure you've had some things happen to you like that.
Oh, it's a long story.
It's a long story. I know. You and I have got to talk.
Indeed. We definitely do. We definitely do.
It's
so funny because when I started this program and I found out, I was asking, okay, we have a half hour block of time, right? There's like, oh, no, an hour. And I was like, an hour? What am I going to find to fill up an hour? And with regularity, an hour is just definitely not enough. But
I know.
It's a great topic. But you've mentioned the concept of synchronicity. You sprinkled it around in our conversation. I'd love for you to kind of dig into that a bit more and what role it plays in finding our life purpose.
Right. I think it's a big, big role. In fact, I would say, let me just back up a tad because I know some people might not be so familiar with the term, although it's become very popular since the Celestine Prophecy came out. But it was actually a word that was coined by Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist, many years ago. And when he began looking at how the unconscious works and how we attract things to ourselves that we don't even know we're doing.
Mm.
And that if we pay attention to the messages around us, we can really see, we can pick up a lot of information or a lot of direction from that. Synchronicity is like when something happens, we've all had the experience of like thinking about someone and for a minute and then they call.
Indeed.
And I really just, that happens to me so much. Or when you need something and then, you're thinking you need something and then a couple days later you'll see something in the newspaper or you'll see a notice somewhere and it'll come to you. So it's the sense that two or more things come together, but there's no cause to it. It's an acausal connecting principle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no cause to it, but it is responding to something, some energy in the universe. And, of course, everybody likes to cite the quantum physics particle experiments where they can, change one particle here and instantaneously across the world with no sense, no link in time or distance, the corresponding particle will also shift. All kinds of things like that to kind of back up this idea. But experiencing synchronicity is so much fun. It's so energizing if something happens out of the blue and, you don't know why. A lot of times people are always asking, well, why did it happen? I mean, how can I know what the meaning is? You don't always know right away. You might know because you were just thinking of this thing and boom, they called you. But it might be that you just needed to talk to that person at that moment, and that was the kind of the machinery behind the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Law of attraction says, you put out what you want, you focus on something, you have an intention, and your mental energy is focused, and your emotional heart, too, is focused on a goal or bringing in something to you. And synchronicity, to me, is that machinery behind the scenes that brings it to you. I'll never forget in the old days when I was an artist, I started to think, I had a friend who kind of turned me on to some ideas, and she said, oh, I learned this thing where you draw a mandala shape, just a round circle, and you put into it things that you want. You put, you want more money, put specific sums of, like, I want my income to increase by a certain amount, I want to get a new car, whatever. Usually it's a lot of material things that you first think of.
Uh-huh.
You put them in there, and then you focus your energy on that for a while, and then you put it away. Well, I did that, and I would draw. I love the idea of putting art and, metaphysics together, so I would love drawing something out, making it all spiritual and beautiful and intense and focused. And I would look at it like 5 minutes a day or maybe 30 seconds a day, not too much, put it away in my underwear drawer.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, 6 months later, I'd unearth that thing. I'd forgotten all about it. And I would look at it, and I'd realize, hey, things have actually appeared in my life, and I had forgotten that I actually asked for that.
Yeah.
And I was amazed. And then I was also kind of chagrined because, I could have asked for more. your ego steps in there, and you said,
indeed,
getting greedy. But,
yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of treasure mapping. I'm sure you're familiar with that
treasure
concept
mapping.
As well. Yeah, I do that.
Absolutely. I love those. Putting collages together for what you want. I love doing that. It's fun. And I used to teach classes at Esalen a lot. And my daughter and I, actually, she would teach with me sometimes. And we would have a week-long class on life purpose. And one of the best days would be the evenings. And I always bought this, like, load of magazines in my car. And gave it out to people. It's like kindergarten. I loved it. And everybody cut up stuff and put down their wedding dresses and their cars and their husbands and their apartments and that new couch. And it's a fun thing to do, and it raises your energy.
Yes.
And that's really all you need to do to start law of attraction coming into you, is to have a higher kind of energy level.
Indeed.
And you really have fun with it. It's not all serious, but enjoy it and relax with it and ask for what you want, and then the synchronicity seems to miraculously bring something to you that leads you to the next step and the next step.
Indeed, indeed. It's a really fascinating process. I mean, especially if you, you know, I know people who like document, you know, things that they've manifested, and over time you kind of look back on it, you're just like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just amazing. I remember one of the stories in my book, When Life Changes or You Wish It Would, it's I interviewed so many interesting people in that because they were really teaching me about their process, and I was like, oh, really? That happened? Well, I was fascinated. It's my love of people, I think, that's got me on this path, because I really do. I am fascinated by human beings that are interesting.
Oh,
I really,
no doubt. I
don't know how
you.
People get somewhere. There's one story, though, with a woman named Marty. She was a security supervisor in a large hotel in San Francisco, and, you know, just doing her job, and, of course, being security, she was always around the celebrities and so forth, the people who would come to the hotel for whatever reason. And one day she said, she told me in her interview, she was in the elevator and with Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa was in town.
And she felt this little hand behind her kind of massaging her back, just kind of massaging her back. Marty felt this. And she and Mother Teresa exchanged glances. She said that they never said a word. And then, you know, she went in and did her thing. But it was that kind of, she said, that image of Mother Teresa never left her mind. And that to me was a kind of synchronicity, because what she told me later was that, you know, Marty, she did well at her job there. She was very good at her job, but she wanted to do something more. And her heart kept telling her she wanted to help people in some way.
Oh.
But now here's a good example of being in the right place, because she didn't just quit her job. She used the contacts and the people that she knew that she'd already made contacts where she worked, in her line of work. And she kept those contacts, and gradually one thing led to another, but she eventually opened a nonprofit that was for helping, I think it was for helping terminally ill adults. You know how they have that, you have a child and give them the wish they want?
Yes, like the One Wish Foundation or something like that.
Yes, I forget the name of it now, but Marty wanted to do that, and she set one up for adults. And it was a process. But I tell you, when I listened to her, I thought, you know, it was that kind of catalyzing moment. No words were spoken, with Mother Teresa just rubbing her shoulders. It probably, I don't know, I think it was a synchronicity that kind of activated Marty's fire.
No doubt.
Started
absolutely.
Going down the road, you know?
Unbelievable.
And I thought that was a great story.
Well, when you tell that story, another quote that I saw that really struck me in your book, Purpose of Your Life, it says, doing what matters is spirituality, integrity, and action. And I just thought, my goodness, that's just so powerful to think about. And so what Marty was essentially doing was you know, acting on what mattered in her heart. So that's
exactly.
That's a
good point that you're because I think when we think about honesty and integrity, these moral virtues, so to speak, sort of sound like, oh well, those are grand for someone to do, but what does that really mean? You know, but what it means is doing something that matters to you, which means, well, let's say it matters to you for a laudable reason, that you want to do something for others, you're, you know, doing it for the good of others and yourself.
Sure.
But that does become, then that becomes your, you are the expression then of honesty in action or helping others, service and integrity. That integrity means acting, you know, with no hidden agenda, but to do the right thing in the right moment and so forth. It isn't just a kind of abstract symbol, like you say, you know, this is how you do it. Each moment. So that we get back here to the same idea of each moment is the only moment you have to make a difference in the world. And if you just keep doing more of it, then you probably will feel that your life
is
fulfilling.
And that's just so reassuring, because people can manage a moment, you know, rather than it's like, oh, what's my 10-year, 15-year projection for X, Y, and Z? It's like, well, just manage the moment.
I know. I people say, what do you... I always cringe when people said, what do you want to be in 5 years? God, I don't know. Now, I know that I should be thinking ahead, but I don't know right now. I'll think about that. Well, I like, you remember, have you listened to the teacher Abraham and
yes.
Jerry Hicks?
Indeed,
yeah,
indeed.
I'm sure you probably are familiar with that work. And I really like what they say. I think they're such clear teachers. And they say so many fabulous and quotable things. It's just wonderful. But one of the things I liked when I heard one of their, I had a lot of their tapes and I went to see them a couple times, but they talked about like segmenting your day. You know, this is kind of like the morning segment. And that makes sense to me. It's like, what's the purpose for this segment of your day?
Mm.
You know, maybe you want to go to bed peacefully tonight.
Okay.
That's the purpose of this segment, you know, and the next segment, and you break it down like that. Whenever you have a big project, always people tell you the advice is chunk it down so that you can, you know, do the right thing now and don't get ahead of yourself. Slow down is a very good spiritual principle, I think, unless you're so slow you need to speed up a little bit.
Are you familiar with the writer, artist, Sark? Are you familiar with Sark? I don't S-A-R-K.
Yes, I do. Uh-huh.
Well, she came up with this wonderful idea of micro movements, which I've always liked. And basically, for example, if you want to clean a closet, well, Monday you open up the door, and Tuesday you look inside, and Wednesday you hire a space organizer, and then you know by Friday you're creating some energetic momentum to actually achieve the objective of cleaning the closet. So.
Yes. Now, you see what you're saying there. I totally agree with you. And what you were talking about, by the way, is not multitasking.
No, it's not.
We think multitasking is going to get us more because we're doing more in a short span of time. Actually, people are proving, I don't know where they prove this, but through some certain things they can show that you do actually get more accomplished if you focus on one thing and do it well and move on to the next. But we always think we can do two or three things at one time, or at least we try that most of the time.
You know, if you, like, on any given day, if you're driving along and you see, you know, some chica, you know, chatting on her cell phone, putting on eye makeup, you know, driving with one hand, you're just like, well, I don't know whether this is really the best approach to accomplishing all these things, but I guess, you know, it works for some people, but then, you know, a fender bender will occur about 10 minutes later.
Right.
So, not a good thing. So, well, we jumped into a little bit about synchronicity. I know intuition is one of the prongs of this, one of the tools that you tend to leverage in your work, and I was wondering if you expand a little bit about that for a bit.
On intuition?
Mm-hmm.
You think intuition?
Yeah, because we've talked about synchronicity and how intuition kind of builds on that, or how you specifically leverage it in your work, or encourage other people to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think maybe some people might think they don't have any intuition. Excuse me. You know, some people might think, well, I'm not intuitive. You know, people who may be very logical may think they don't use it, and what is it? And I think everybody has it. Maybe to more degree or less degree at times, but I really do think everybody has it. It's like a sixth sense that really guides us, and most of the time, maybe we don't realize that that's what it is. You know, a lot of people call it a gut feeling. I just did that by my gut feeling. You know, my gut feeling is this, or, you know, my instinct is that. But so I think it's important to really listen to that, because if I'm sure all of us have this experience of thinking to yourself, you know, you'd go, some moment happened and it didn't turn out the way you thought, and then of course, like, some time later you think, I knew that was going to happen. I should have known. I knew that, but I didn't listen to it. I mean, don't you just love that?
Indeed.
So, I think if we want to think about what intuition is, for me, I think some people get, like, prickles on their skin when they know something is true. They get goosebumps. Because some people are very kinesthetic and they feel it.
Sure.
I have had the experience of actually kind of hearing it. And it happened that time I was in Santa Fe that I was kind of confused about what to do. I felt like the energy had dropped, so I was feeling that. I really literally woke up and I wasn't as excited to be there as I was when I first got there.
Sure.
And I just noticed, well, maybe this isn't exactly the right place. I was starting to feel hemmed in. I really need, I'm a person who was born in California, and I need to live near the water somehow. I just know that.
Gotcha.
I can see the water from my bathroom. I have a little teeny piece of the bay that I can see. But I don't know. I just think, you know, maybe that was it. But in my head, I actually one day heard, and not like a voice, I wasn't going crazy. I just kind of heard or saw in my mind, this would be a good time to go to graduate school. Just like that. A quiet, clear statement. And I have learned over the years studying this that the intuition speaks to you in one statement at a time, clearly, not much emotion, probably not any emotion. It's not an emotional thing. Oh, you have to go back to school. It's not like that.
You know, trumpets or anything? Or
What?
No trumpets or, you know, or big booming
Maybe.
Voices?
Some people might be lucky to get some, but I didn't get any. It's just like, there it is. And it was even something I didn't want to do because, as I said, I had kids and everything. So I think the intuition will speak to us in clear, direct statements, one at a time. It is not confusing. It's just simple. And I think it takes us, we feel kind of scared of it, almost like a little, not scared, like fearful, but it takes us, it means that we have to leave our comfort zone, which was true for me.
Indeed.
And I think if we look, a lot of us, if we look at our lives and we've made decisions like that, you know, a lot of us have stretched and grown by listening to our intuition, by taking a leap. And some people, you know, leave New York, come out to California, didn't know what they were going to do, or vice versa. And those big leaps of faith kind of sometimes are following the intuition. And I think that the clue to the intuition is that it instinctively feels that if you do that thing or follow that guidance, you will grow.
Mm.
And I don't know what grow means, but you know that you will evolve to
sure.
a better place, or you'll have more skills, or you'll have more, you know, it'll be more developing of your natural strengths. And so that's your guideline. Now, fearful intuitions aren't so much intuitions, I think,
it's
as
more
they
like
are
the,
like expressions of the ego and
yes.
the past bearing
sure.
down on us. No.
Well, it looks like we have a caller here. Let's see, from the 203 area code. Let's see whether we can get this individual on the line. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Yes. And your name?
Hi, this is Robin Askin.
Okay. Did you have a question for Dr. Adrian?
Yes. I just wanted to say hello because Dr. Adrian had been to my center in Westport about 9 years
ago. Hi, Robin.
How are you?
I actually remembered and recognized your name. That was a long time ago, but I was thinking about you the other day. I know that sounds crazy, but
I was thinking
about you the other day because you and I haven't spoken for, I don't know, what, 7 years or something?
A long time, and, you know, talk about synchronicity. You know, I'm checking emails from the Askin Center I haven't checked in weeks, and I always read your newsletters, and I saw the show was live, so I dialed it, who knows, and I've been enjoying listening to it, so I just like to say hello, and
Oh, that's great. Are you still running the Askin Center?
No, unfortunately, I'm not anymore. I've actually tattooed the logo on my hip, so I keep the spirit alive.
That's great.
And that was 1998. So I'm hoping at some point I'll be able to revisit the Askin Center and the all the spiritual healing and the work that it was doing and meant to do. So. Just wanted to say hello.
Oh, thank you so
That's
much
really
for calling.
Great to hear from you.
Yeah,
and I have my own radio show, the Healthy Mind and Body Hour, and then I changed it to the Imagine the Possibilities, WICC, Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I looked at this live radio show, and I thought, you know, I always wanted callers to come in and call in and say hello. so I thought, you know what, I'm just going to dial the number and say, there's someone out there listening and enjoying this beautiful interaction. And,
oh, well, thank you,
you
so much.
Here I am standing on my little deck in Danbury, Connecticut, and you know what, I'm holding the light and out here in this part of the country, so I just wanted to say hello. And
oh, that's
great.
So, that's fabulous. Thanks so much for calling, Robin.
Well,
we really appreciate
it. Email me with your email address, and we can chat again.
I'd love to. Carol, I really have followed your work for years, and can't thank you enough for what you contribute to our spiritual growth and development. So,
well,
thank you
very much.
Well, thanks so much again for calling. Really appreciate you tuning in.
I have no question, nothing to offer, but, you know, thank you for taking a moment to chat with me, and I'm enjoying everything I'm hearing this evening.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, great.
Okay, well, have a great night.
Thank you.
Thanks. I wish you both well.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Robin.
Oh, that's very pleasant. Glad that she was able to get through there.
That
wow.
Great.
A great
yep,
textbook
I
example.
Being at her center.
Yeah, a great textbook example on synchronicity right there.
There you go. I knew it. Because I really was. I'm not lying. I was thinking about that time that I went out there to Connecticut, and we had a wonderful gathering. She had a great thing going on. We, you know, we did one of the classes, and a lot of people showed up, and it was just fun. And I met a good friend out there, Nancy Wazanoff, who was nearby, and it was a wonderful time. And I was just, I don't know why it occurred to me recently. See? There you go.
What do you know? What do you
it's
know?
It's an action there.
Well, I can imagine you've got a lot cooking in your neck of the woods as far as upcoming programs or projects. Or would you care to share what's up on your agenda?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm still basically this year I have been spending. I'm in a numerological sixth personal year, which means my focus is on domestic life and family, which has been so true for me. Mm-hmm. This year, because I have four grandkids, and I've been spending a lot of time with them because they're at this juicy age. They're all in their life, you know, 5, 6, and 7, and I just adore this time with them. So I've been doing that, and I've also just been continuing my consulting practice with people. And, you know, I've been writing. I just finished a book that I'm publishing in Japan right now.
Oh.
It's been translated, and I'm hoping I'm going to sell it here in the U.S. too. I just haven't gotten motivated here to get going. And then yesterday I went down to the Learning Annex. I was down in Studio City visiting my daughter and the kids, and happened to be able to combine that with a taping session. I found out the Learning Annex, which, you know, I've taught for them for years here in California and Toronto, New York. They're going online, I think, in September and putting a lot of classes online. So I videotaped 2 classes on numerology for them yesterday, and that was really fun. It was great. I enjoyed it a lot. It's kind of strange to be talking to a camera instead of a group of people, but I don't know. Hey, I thought this is fun.
Okay.
And I think those classes will be up in September, which isn't that far away. That's next month.
Good. That's
so
true.
I don't know, I don't know what their process is, but they're going to advertise them and put them out there. So I'm hoping that one of them is called The Magic of Numbers, and the other one is Discover Your Destiny Using Numerology.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 2 different methods that I teach. And that, for me, is really easy to teach, and it's always fun, and I so love sharing that information because it's easy for people to pick it up. You know, it's not really hard. It takes practice, of course, doing any kind of analysis, as you well know. But
sure.
You know, I think it is something that people can find easier to pick up than some other spiritual tools. So that's what I've been doing. And, you know, I'm just I'm enjoying this period of my life a lot, actually.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That gives all of us that are kind of chugging along cause for hope.
Well, I'm chugging over here, too, and a little slower than usual, but I did get a treadmill, and I've been doing that, too, so, you know, I do yoga and treadmill, that's walking, that's ways that I keep balanced.
Indeed. It's so funny, when I look at people like Tina Turner, I mean, it's like, I guess, evolving, I don't even want to call it aging, it's being redefined every hour,
yes.
Basically.
so true. And I am so impressed with entertainers. I say this a lot to my boyfriend. I should say the man in my life, I suppose. I don't really like the term boyfriend. It seems so tacky, but that's he is the man in my life, my sweetie.
Uh-huh.
And we've been together 7 years, so it's, you know, that's what it is. But I'm so impressed because he really likes music. He keeps up with music more than I do. But you know that the entertainers who can keep themselves going, you know, and in a field which is very competitive and very looks-oriented as well as, you know, talent-oriented, and people like Cher and Madonna and, you know, Tina Turner, my God, they do amaze me because that's very energetic. To me, that's a lot of energy
definitely.
To do what they do.
Definitely. Yeah. In fact, I was just reading an article about Neil Diamond today in the New York Times. He's 67, showing no signs of slowing down. And, I mean, he was like saying that this is what he feels God has wanted him to do. And he doesn't get the sense that he's supposed to stop anytime soon. So he's just going to keep going.
Right.
And each performance to him is like running a marathon as far as the energy he expends. During the performance. So I was like, oh, man, 67, just tearing it up.
Yeah.
So that's
right.
Cool.
Well, I think in the cases of people who really are, you know, they are totally in tune with what turns them on. And that energy flow is so, it feeds them. There's no resistance. If we're doing something that we're resisting by thinking it's not the right thing, that's a lot of energy that it uses up, a lot of creative energy, as we all know, that it ages you because you're resisting it, just as if you're gritting your teeth against the wind.
Yes.
But if you're not gritting your teeth, you know, you're sort of in the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that things aren't hard to do and take energy, but there's not that inner resistance that drags you down.
Yeah.
And so, you know, why not do it? It's the most thing. I really think one thing that we should make the point of here is doing the thing that feeds you the most.
Yes.
You can't maybe do it every single minute of the day, but get it in there, even if you can only do it a little bit at a time.
Sure.
Get it in there. I mean, I remember one client who said she wanted to write. She was driven to write, but she had a family, of course, and a husband and a job and everything. And so what we came up with is she was going to commit to writing 10 minutes on Sunday morning. That's
it.
And
something?
Of course, you know, once you get started, you know, maybe it's a 30 minutes after all. But she got a lot accomplished just doing 10 minutes on a Sunday morning because she loved doing it. And it was important enough to schedule it into the calendar, which I think is one of the key things we must remember. If you want to do something, don't just say you're going to do it. Write it down in your calendar. When are you going to do it? I always force my, I don't say force, that's a bad word. I always suggest to my clients strongly that they write it down. Okay, when are you going to do this? Monday morning, what time?
Mm-hmm.
And because if that, by writing things down, they will manifest more quickly. That's
sure.
The way it is.
Definitely. I mean, it's like you're putting energy behind the intention.
Exactly. And a commitment. And your heart knows when you're committed and when you're not.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Definitely,
so
definitely.
You're going to do it. Do
yeah.
it.
Indeed. I hear you.
And if you can't do it, that's okay, too, because you can readjust. I mean, you know, sometimes we can't make the doctor's appointment or the dentist appointment, so we have to reschedule. So
mm-hmm.
you can always reschedule. You don't have to be rigid about it, but do keep on it and keep following through on things.
Sure.
And then you feel good about yourself. And when you feel good about yourself, you attract more things into your life that are in tune with your vibration, your life purpose.
Indeed. And I mean, the idea to me of self-respect or self-love, it just seems to be attached to this whole idea of like, okay, well, what I desire is important. So somehow, you know, communicating that to yourself kind of reinforces that within your own thinking.
Exactly. You know, sometimes it takes 3 or 4 times, you know, before our lives turn around, you know, we stop and start, and, you know, it just takes a long time. But, you know, I have a story in my book, When Life Changes, Or You Wish It Would, about a guy who's in a homeless shelter. I was interviewing the director of it. I really loved this guy, too. He had a regular job, and he also ran a homeless shelter. I was like, wow, he does you know.
Wow.
And he was telling me about a man who'd been in there, and he owned a nightclub and he'd gotten divorced and he'd had all these ups and downs. And then he wound up in a homeless shelter. He was an ordinary guy down on his luck and had to, you know, go into homeless shelter. And then he got Parkinson's disease. And then at the age of like 62 or something, he got his high school diploma.
Oh.
And then he started a business and a little newsletter that he was writing.
Oh.
And it was like, wow, that guy is really impressive. He's an inspiration.
Oh, my
he can
goodness.
Go up and down. And so sometimes it takes a while. We can turn our lives around several times.
Sure.
And, hey, there's no, you know, there's no rush here. I have found, at least that's what I think. And I'm a person who's very impatient, unfortunately.
You think you're impatient. You know, you're talking to Miss Impatient, you know, number one.
Are you impatient? Well,
it's got to be done. It's got to be done yesterday. Got to be done yesterday. And I think, again, it's like when we are, it's sometimes when you get either discouraged or you just, you know, start, questioning your trust in the process. You're just like, but it needs to hurry up. It needs to happen now. But we forget that everything happens for a reason and in divine order.
Right. Right. So it's how we handle our mistakes and failures and problems and so forth. It's how we handle it that really, you know, shows our progress in life.
Mm-hmm.
So
indeed, definitely.
That's more in tune with our purpose, I think.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the author Mary Catherine Bateson by chance? She is one of the daughters.
So.
Yeah, one of the daughters of Margaret Mead, and she's like a cultural anthropologist. And she wrote a book.
Oh,
called,
really?
Oh, yeah. Her writing is amazing. She wrote a book called Composing a Life, and basically this whole idea about, you know, life is no longer seen as a like a linear type of rational progression.
Right.
It's like we're spiraling more than just kind of going from point A to point B to point C.
What's her last name?
Mary Catherine Bateson, B-A-T-E.
Oh, Bateson, right,
Yeah, that book, it's just one of the books
that I might pick that up. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's one of the books that has, like, changed my life. But it's reassuring because it makes, it advocates, like, an improvisational approach to it's like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, then we dip, and then we go up, and then we're like, okay, I'm not crazy. That's just it's just a new way of approaching the life.
Well, you know, for that same reason, I'm glad you brought up this book, because I find that spiritual tools for me are often, I love reading the writing of writers. For example, Natalie Goldberg's books.
Mm.
You know, she's a student of Buddhism, for one thing, but she's a fabulous writing teacher. I wish someday I could take a class from her.
Sure.
But reading her books on writing and the assignments she gives to, to her students, they're so inspiring in terms of philosophy and spirituality, not just about writing. And Brenda Yuland had the same effect on me. She's a woman who's passed away now. She was in her 90s, Brenda Yuland, U-E-L-A-N-D.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And, hello?
Yes, and I actually think of, what's her name, Julia Cameron, if you're familiar with her.
Oh, yes, she's very good, too. Same thing. It's just, I particularly love reading women's writings, frankly, and writers. I love to hear what they think about, you know, and that's very inspiring. It's a spiritual approach without dwelling on principles and so forth.
So I find it
very, very exciting to read that kind of work.
Well, I definitely agree. Well, gosh, I know we have a lot of listeners who are probably wondering, well, how do I get in touch with this woman? How do I get a hold of whatever she's doing or find out what's up, what's new with her? So if you'd like to share some contact information.
Sure. Thank you. Yes, I just invite everyone to come to my website, and that is just simply my name, Carol Adrienne. And Adrienne is spelled ADRIENNE.com. So it's caroladrienne.com. I do have my numerology charts on sale there. They're only $20, $19.95. And you can enter your information. You always want to use your birth name, your birth certificate name, and your birthday. And you can get a full chart and it explains, you know, it gives you a forecast also for the next 12 months. And so those are really fun, and I encourage everyone to do that. If you're thinking about what is your life purpose, the charts can give you kind of a steer in the right direction. And, you know, I'm open for consultations. I do a lot of work by phone.
Okay.
And, you can just come to my website, if anybody's listening, and put your email address in my website mailing list. And then when I get these classes up and running, that, you know, if you're interested in taking those, like, I will be sending out newsletters and so forth. So, yeah, everything is on my website at caroladrienne.com.
Okay. Well, Dr. Adrian, we're so thrilled that you're able to join us this evening. We are winding down the program. And, again, thanks again, and have a good evening.
Oh, you're so welcome.
And this is
Dr. I hope to see you out here in California.
Oh, most certainly. I'll give you a call. And
okay.
This is Dr. Udari Abassi signing off from another broadcast of Everyday Divinity. And whatever path you're on and wherever life will may take you, may you find grace in the daily race. Peace.